And I think healthcare is incredibly immature in that. And I see it all the time in the media, you know, the rhetoric around providers and funders. And it's just such a lost opportunity that you don't need to stick to your monoline business. In fact, there's synergies through blending the businesses together, right? And that's where the competitive advantage lies. If you, you know, you retreat to your own corners, you know, you're not making the most of an opportunity, right?
Welcome to Partnership Plus, your go-to source for modern partnership wisdom with your host, Phil Hayes St. Clair.
Hi, it's Phil, and in this episode of Partnership Plus, we get to meet David Simpson, who has been operating in partnerships in healthcare in New Zealand and Australia for the better part of his career. This is such a jam-packed episode full of insights and tips and approaches for how you can rethink your approach to strategic partnerships. It's a brilliant conversation. We even talk about shoes that have Lego. So if you are into one of those two things or just partnerships by itself, this is a great conversation. So without further ado, introducing David Simpson. So Dave Simpson, it is so good to see you today.
Likewise, Phil. Nice to join you.
Well, we're going to go through a few different chapters and iterations here. But before we do, let's dive into the David Simpson backstory. Where did you come from and what had brought you to where you are today?
Seems like a long story, Phil. I'm reminded of that when you know, I'm getting closer to another big number, but you know, still youthful at heart. Look, not often where I sort of start with this stuff is I was born in Canada, raised in New Zealand. You know, we came to New Zealand in 1990. We're supposed to be here for a year, and you know, many decades on, still well and truly a Kiwi. But I've been fortunate enough through my life to experience, you know, many different places. You know, having lived in the UK for a while. 6 years in Australia, obviously, you know, where I met you, and then moved back to New Zealand about 3 years ago. And, you know, my career has been very much, you know, the jungle gym and not the ladder. And, you know, I haven't really had much of a plan other than every time someone asks me to do something, I'll say yes. And sort of, you know, I think over my career, I've built confidence in kind of backing myself and had great leaders who have backed me and given me these opportunities and sort of got me where I am. Originally sort of clinically trained, as I say, you know, as a physio, I wasn't very good. So I moved to the commercial side of healthcare. where I've sort of spent the last couple of decades, and you know, love what I do. I love being able to make a systemic impact across health systems, and you know, as I said to somebody recently, I feel like I've got some of the most purposeful work anyone could ever have, and particularly when people need it at, you know, moments of truth in their lives. If we can make it just a little bit better, that's incredibly satisfying and rewarding.
It's interesting. So we met as we were on the Australian side, thinking about how do we introduce new diagnostic technologies for wellness and healthcare into the New Zealand market. And when, well, after that first conversation, my team went to New Zealand, we went to your organization, Southern Cross Healthcare. And I think it's fair to say that we were completely blown away by the intentionality of that organization and the way that they think very deeply about the entire New Zealand population and its health over not just a quarter or a year or a five-year plan, but over a generational kind of perspective. And I remember just being a bit overwhelmed by that, because you don't often see that kind of approach. And, you know, we were there to create a really new and impactful partnership. And really all we had to go on was the goodwill that had been established essentially by you and your organization and ours. And it created a really warm welcome into an organization. So you've been doing partnerships for a very, very long time. When you think about what it takes to build a really fantastic partnership, what do you think of it? What do you think of the core ingredients that make that work? Like, what are we missing into the bowl to make something from nothing?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something I think a lot about. And look, to be honest with you, Phil, I think healthcare, and some people may challenge me on this, but I often struggle to think of a more complex industry. And we all know that for a variety of reasons, right? The payer and the consumer are different versus the provider. You know, you've got this weird sort of triumvirate type relationship of relationship that's not sort of typical in most markets, right? Willing buyer, willing seller. And then you've got, you know, a whole lot of other overlay that creates the complexity of two-tiered systems and private and public. And, you know, I could go on for hours. So I think honestly, and you know, where I kind of come with this stuff is in healthcare, because of that complexity, nobody can do everything well, right? And I think there's this gravitational pull, particularly to big corporates. And you see this in the US, you see it even in ANZ, where there's this sort of corporate psyche often where we're big enough, we'll do it ourselves. And the reality is often big corporates try and fail because it's not in their DNA. And I think particularly with provider organizations that I've worked with, you know, the good ones are the ones who actually get to the point where they go, we're not a technology company, but we're going to partner with the best technology. We're going to bring our expertise and experience and domain knowledge to the problem we're trying to solve or the opportunity we're trying to improve, and we'll actually build something together. And to your question around then, I guess, ingredients and where I like to start with partnerships. I work across a number of different types of partnerships, from technology to clinical, et cetera. It really does start with values, number one. Is there values alignment? Because that's the enduring part, right? If you actually have aligned values and what you feel is important in business and life. And then the second one is around ambition. I think also being clear on what is the shared ambition that you want together. And most of the time, I think spending that time up front, right, at a foundation, and sometimes, you know, it feels like it's really takes a really long time. But my experience is if you spend the time up front, right, it actually gets a whole lot easier. And there's a great Abraham Lincoln quote. It's my favorite one. And something goes along the lines, you know, if I had 7 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend 6 hours sharpening my axe. And I think there's never a better quote to partnerships. Is spend the time up front, you solve a whole lot of programs and issues later on if you take that approach.
Oh, geez, I couldn't agree more. You know, it's funny because there's an assumption that there is an instant understanding and shared language by virtue of people being in the same industry in the same environment. And I could count 2 or 3 dozen times where even the word success carries with it, it's such a loaded term in the first place, but it carries such assumption around what that means, both for the individual who you're talking to and also for their organization. I think it's interesting how people often don't dive deep enough into understanding the dichotomy of those two incentives, right? You know, when we're talking about senior leaders or people who are trying to build things, or even let's put it right back down to a small business, you know, you might be a small dental practice that might be trying to work out how do we partner with local sporting teams, things from as fundamental as that right through to large complex corporate organizations. There are often two primary incentives at play, right? There's one of the individual, you know, where am I in my career? How is this going to help me be better, be seen to be better, be more productive? And what does it mean for my organization? And to assume those two things are the same, I think, is a mistake most of the time. And the only way you can get to that point is by having these conversations to tease that out.
Fully agree. And, you know, one of the things I spend a lot of time about, right, is, you know, being really clear. And I think about it like a Venn diagram, right? So this is the other important thing I think I've learned with partnerships. They can get really complex really quickly. But what's the, you know, I think your, you know, your best friend in creating partnerships is a whiteboard and two circles, right? It's that simple.
Yep.
You know, and the overlapping bit. What are we really good at? What are you really good at? And what are the bits that overlap in the middle, right? That's the, I like to call it compound value, right? Yep. What's the compound value that we create collectively? And I think healthcare is incredibly immature in that. And I see it all the time in the media, you know, the rhetoric around providers and funders. And it's just such a lost opportunity that you don't need to stick to your monoline business. In fact, there's synergies through blending the businesses together, right? And that's where the competitive advantage lies. If you retreat to your own corners, you know, you're not making the most of an opportunity, right?
You mentioned before this idea of having these conversations, but I just want to go back to something that you said right at the beginning of this, which was, how is it that you can create that compound value when you first walk in the door? And that Venn diagram approach, compound value, is super important. How do you know that the person you're speaking to in the first instance, where you have no relationship whatsoever in that new organization, is vaguely the right person to be speaking to in the first place?
You know, often it's a good question. You know, one of the things, even before going in the room, what I try to do, it's not always easy, but do your research beforehand. Because, you know, the reality is, if somebody, and, you know, I think some of the partners who've come in to me in the past, they've spent time combing my LinkedIn profile. They've spent time combing our documents. They understand our corporate impact statement, what we're trying to achieve. So all of a sudden, you have some tether of relevance to someone. And I think very quickly, when you're particularly working with senior decision makers who spend a lot of time thinking in that sort of level of strategy, where we take in the business, how am I leading? You can start to create that link, and you almost get instant credibility that, or the apathy with them, right? Around, I know a little bit about you. You have this, I call it corporate empathy, right? You actually kind of put yourself in another executive's shoes. I know what you're thinking about. I don't know the context, but I know the domain that you're thinking in. I know the context that you're thinking in to some degree. And then how can I use that as a first anchor into a relationship and a much more substantial, you know, discussion and dialogue?
Let's go one step further than that. How do you determine whether a leader has decided, beyond the corporate bravado, that the organization can't go it alone, that they have no other choice than to find partnership, even if their rhetoric spell something very, very different? Because, you know, you can do that research, you can try and come in well prepared. I spend a lot of my time trying to understand as quickly as possible if the decision at the top, which is hopefully filtered down through the ranks, has been, you know, we can't do this ourselves. We're actively looking to build a partnership muscle, trying to work out how we make this work, but we don't know what to do next. And we're actually, frankly, a little bit embarrassed, maybe a little bit cagey about the fact we don't know how to do this well. How do you test for that? Or is it as simple as a point blank question? You know, have you arrived at a position that you realize that you can't do this all yourself? How do you tease that out in those conversations?
I guess going back to my other point, I think by starting that almost creates as your level set, right? By doing your research, understanding where there are. I think it's through, you know, I call it strategic inquiry, right? It's the inquiring, asking questions. You'll know when you start to bump against that hard stop, right? Most people don't have a hard stop. They've got a stop, you know, soft stop, then there's another one, then you hit the hard stop at some point. I think through inquiry, you very quickly, through, as you say, asking those questions, start to understand where it is. So, you know, it's like fishing, right? You cast the line out as far as you can go, and then you start pulling it in, right? And I think once you find the right level, then you zero in. Then you kind of, instead of going almost to some degree vertical, you start going horizontal. Is, you know, what's the art of the possible? Where is there the opportunities? Where are the synergies? You know, the old cliche of 1 + 1 = 3, like starting to play around with ideas, then starting to visualize it on the, you know, double sort of circles. Then you're starting to get materiality in it, right? And then you can start to flesh it out into past concept, into the more tangible actions, I think.
I love that. You know, it's funny, when we started to think about partnerships seriously at Drop Buyer Health, I pulled an old document that I'd written at, I think, two companies before that, which was a 5-page document. An old mentor of mine had said to me, never walk into a conversation with a blank piece of paper. But always walk out of the third meeting with a document that can be a sales document. And what we ended up doing was creating a template, which was a 5-slide co-design template, which has exactly what you were describing. At, you know, slide 3, there's a Venn diagram. Slide one is how. What are the three steps we have to undertake in this very unique partnership to develop trust and just make it very obvious?
Yep.
So obvious people go, well, of course you do that, but of course it's difficult to do that. Then there is a set of principles that we go to, and we make them quite overt. This is how we work, and we don't want that to be left to your imagination. We'd like to be pretty clear on what that is. Then you have the slide that says, you know, why does this partnership make sense, which is where your compound value lives. Yep. And just to make it absolutely clear that we're not here to make this look pretty, the next slide is a timeline, which is all about how do we get to a point of not closing a deal, but what is the first win that we can both achieve subsequent to deal agreement within the first 6 months. And we use that ad nauseum. In fact, I built that into one of the courses I've written. And it's one of those things that people have gone, why didn't we have this before? And the best part about this sort of deck is that it's only five slides. And it can be used, once it's locked down, it can be used as a sales document, as, you know, the way to sort of build a coalition of the willing in the organization you're never going to get party to. And it creates a huge amount of groundswell, which is ultimately pretty positive.
I love what you say, right? You've absolutely nailed it. I've got this. I think I've learned probably the hard way, if I'm honest, right? Because I think there's this tendency to kind of get as much as you possibly can. Let's look at all the opportunities and whatever else. And 99% of people, I think, implode when they get any more than three. So we often talk about the law of threes. Get it into 3 points. People can consume that. They can manage it. It actually feels like, you know, I can walk out of this meeting today and I can do those three things. If I give you a list of 12, you're just like, oh my God, right? Add it to the other 462, right? And I don't even know how many that makes, but it's a lot more than anyone can do. Mm-hmm. So I think sticking to the law of three is so important. And also, you know, break it down into bite-sized chunks, exactly as you say, right? Is often I'll talk about three streams of work or three phases or whatever else. Whether or not that's with your team, you know, the functional functional leadership, whether or not that's with your board, whether or not that's with the market. Again, the law of three works because people can understand, in bite-sized people, what comes first, what comes second, what comes third. And I can actually see a path through it, right? And it keeps me motivated, keeps me interested. It doesn't feel like it's too far, you know, out in the future that we're never going to get there.
Yeah, super, super interesting. And I guess the other piece to this is trying to work out how you reward the people that took the risk on the other side of that partnership. So, you know, whenever you go into these partners, and the reason we talk about that first win within the first 6 months of, you know, post-signing the agreement is that, you know, somebody ultimately, or a group of people on the other side of that partner organization, have taken a risk, right, to bring you into their organization. And I feel as though in life you get only a certain number of cards that you can play in order for you to bring people in. And I coined this term, you know, promise cards. And a promise card, let's say you get six in your hand, and putting one of those on the table essentially is I'm putting my reputation and I'm putting my career at risk ultimately to bring in this other organization. I'm really hoping it's going to work.
Yeah.
And the best partnership leaders acknowledge that that is happening all the time when you're introduced to an organization. So it's sort of incumbent on the person coming in and pitching with that other person to make them look good so they can pick that promise card back off the table and they can redeploy it another time.
I'm going to use it, yeah.
And I've found that to great effect in my teams where it's been do not ever take the opportunity that someone's given you to bring you into their organization for granted. At no point should you ever do that.
Yeah, I really, really agree with that, Phil. And I think this is, you know, controversial. Nothing makes me more concerned than the alarm bells going on when you meet somebody the first time and they say, we want to do a partnership. And often you'll say, okay, you're using the big P word. And you say, what does that mean to you? Right? Describe to me what a partnership means. And to me, 95% of the time, what they're saying is, I want a transactional sales relationship with you, right? And it's like, hold on, that is the same, you know, that is something completely different. And often the way I start to define partnership is, and you know, I think in my world where we partner with medical specialists, we partner with technology companies, etc., it's like a marriage, and you know, it's mutual loss and mutual gain, right? Like the same thing. It's not all upside for you and all downside for me, and you charge me more and I pay less. Like it doesn't work like that. A partnership is symbiotic in terms of up and downside. And, you know, I often will challenge people and say, unless the relationship is based on that, what you're talking is about a transaction versus a partnership.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you actually want? And most actually that starts to go, I don't have any point of reference for that. We don't do downside. We just sell upside, and this is the price, and I might be giving you a discount. I'm not talking about a discount. Right? I'm talking about, you know, either being successful together, to your earlier point in defining that word, or we both fail together.
That's it. I mean, the moment, and I can't tell you how strong I've resonated with this, the moment I hear someone say, particularly in their role, I'm a partner something, or I'm here to partner with you, sadly, that word has been so overused in the wrong context to execute on transactions,
yes,
that it's sort of watered that down. And I guess that's why I've got a job. So, you know, when we start to help people understand that we're talking about an era that we're trying to create, we don't use the term duration, or tenure. We try to use this term era because for the most part, people who say, what an end of an era, they're reflecting on what's been usually a pretty positive experience, right? Mm. Where it's been, I really would have liked this era not to have come to an end. Mm. So for anyone who is contemplating the use of the term partnership, I would at least encourage you, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, I'd at least encourage you to be thinking, this is at least a 2 year plus one arrangement.
Yep.
And the first win of this has to happen within the first 6 months, ideally sooner, and structuring can help with that. But if you're thinking about this as a transaction, then just call it for what it is. I'm here to do business development to sell. That is probably going to bring you closer to your transaction if you're that open with it. But if you are decidedly going to say that we're here to do a partnership and you know you're sort of masquerading as a transaction, it's not going to play out well. You've obviously got a visceral reaction to that kind of approach when people say that we're here to partner and there's really a transaction there. How do you think about the durations of partnership? Because in healthcare, this can go on, you know, for decades, where you can have really fantastic, deeply embedded strategic partnerships. I mean, a lot of the OEMs that are creating incredible technologies, the Roches of the world who are doing, you know, all of our great MRI kit and a lot of the diagnostic work that goes on, this takes decades to create, let alone put into the field.
Yeah.
How do you think about the durations of partnerships?
Oh, look, I mean, I often think about them medium to long term because I think you're right. The construct of health, it is a slow moving industry in the main. You have got this construct, particularly if I think about it in the context of working with medical specialists around setting up joint ventures and true partnership, right? It is mutual loss, mutual gain. You're with each other potentially for an entire career, right? You know, there's specialists who come in, they might start at 40, 35, something like that. They're still in the business at 65 to 70, you know, and whatever else. That's a really long time, right? That's it. As you say, that's a generation. It's 30 years. And I think actually, you know, to my mind, when you're actually locking in for the long term, the art of the possible and the ambition could be so much higher. If I look at some of the other businesses in the market, you know, the sort of probably more private equity type firms that are looking 3, 5, maybe 7 times, you know, and they talk about partnership. I struggle to reconcile that because I think health takes a long time to really make big shifts. And therefore those longer time horizons become important, you know, to fulfill those, you know, sort of broader ambitions. I think your other point, you know, in terms of thinking about, you know, those partnerships, your point's right. You got to see the follow through early. And the commitment come to the fore versus, you know, signing the piece of paper, the ink is now dry, job done, and then you move on to the next deal. You know, it's the old cliche, right? It's like a garden. You got to keep watering it. You got to keep nurturing it. You got to keep investing time and effort into it. And very quickly, if you don't do that, it starts to erode, right? So it's like any relationship. You got to keep investing to keep it alive. And often I see, you know, partnerships fall over because the next shiny thing is out there. We're chasing the next partnership versus looking after the ones you already have. So my advice is always is make sure you're looking to invest time and effort to the long term, not just the newest shiny partnership that might present on your desk.
Yeah, it's good advice. And when you think about your role at Southern Cross, you're involved with many entities that are part of that group and then even beyond and outside. When you think about a role like yours, which is presiding over and has all the deep relationships into all those places. Mm. If organizations are thinking about having a very senior role like yours in their organization, outside of healthcare, inside of healthcare, wherever it might be, how does that role function alongside more traditional kind of roles that might be things like the CMO for marketing or in a business development kind of organization? How have you seen that evolve, and how does that work in your current organization? Just to give the CEOs who are listening a view about how they might organize their people for greatest impact.
You know, it's an interesting role. Effectively, you know, in some ways, I often see my roles over the last few have been sort of, I call it a chief connection officer, right? I think partnerships require the entire enterprise to get in behind them to really realize the value. And I think the businesses I've worked in is going, we're not just partnering on a brand. We're actually partnering on operational excellence. We're actually bringing marketing. We're bringing financial services. We're bringing a whole system to a partnership. And that is not a single chief, you know, strategy or chief partnership officer. That's the entire business. So in the role, you need to connect all parts of your enterprise into all parts of your partnership's enterprise, right? And that's also really important to make them enduring, to my earlier point, right? If every one of the partnerships is based on a one-to-one relationship, right, that's pretty flaky and pretty fragile. You actually need depth across an executive team and probably back within the business so those links continue to strengthen and you're not losing corporate knowledge over time and that value's not eroded through the partnership, right? It's locked in for the long term.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that actually touches on a really important tactic when we teach partnerships. And it's really about when you are about to move into a formal arrangement. So you've gone through the process to understand if there's a there, the art of what's possible has been well established. There's nothing worse than there being a single point sensitivity on the other side of the aisle where, you know, someone moves, there's an organizational change in priorities, there's a shift in the structure, and all of a sudden there's just a lack of access to try and get done what you thought could happen. We often say in the rule of five that it's important to try and use LinkedIn to its best and plot a path to at least four other people that are in addition to the person you're dealing with directly. So there is a corporate knowledge. And frankly, to have a cheer squad on the other side for you to, you know, get early warning on new changes that are happening inside the organization, or frankly, to deliver value to people who are outside of the direct partnership arrangement so that they can see there's potentially additional value. It's just creating a network and a net effect that's hopefully going to give you a little bit of extra resilience should the organization change, which of course it always does. And that's one thing I think people get blindsided by. It was going so well, we had great momentum, all of a sudden someone left. Correct. It's like, well,
this going to happen, right?
It's going to happen every day.
It absolutely is. Just thinking about your other, you know, your earlier point around, you know, what is the ingredients? It almost sounds like stating the obvious, but you know, a few years ago, lucky enough to be in the U.S. with you know, a remarkable healthcare organization, one that I really, really admire, and you know, speaking with one of their senior executive, and you know, this is really early on in resetting our strategy, and you know, said to this individual, said, you know, if you were going to give us three pieces of advice, you know, what would those advice be? You're kind of leading the global sort of pointy edge on this stuff. And he said, David, my first bit of advice would be, if you want to be successful in healthcare, you know, align incentives. He said, the second piece of advice I would give you would be align incentives. And he said, the third piece of advice I'd give you is align incentives. Well, I got it. You know, I understood that. But, you know, it's almost becomes a bit of a mantra for us now, right? We think about that as good partnerships are about aligning incentives. You know, it's about, in our world, you know, it's about clinical incentives. How do we deliver the best possible care we can to those people, you know, who come to us, you know, for care in their time of need? You know, there might be also, you know, aligning incentive around operational excellence. How do we make things more efficient, more effective, deliver better value? Is really important. And then ultimately, you know, the financial incentives also come into that system, right? And I think by kind of wrapping these things all together, getting aligned, it creates a very strong nexus, a very strong bond that that becomes hard to break, but actually becomes a very good foundation to do more upon, right? Like it is the basics that you have to just really, really get right in the first instance.
Let's double click on that comment you made about operational excellence. You know, at two of my companies, we found that because we were small and we needed to create technology which was available in different formats, but not the format we needed or we thought we needed to have it developed in, we ended up going to some of our suppliers and we worked really hard to convert them into partners. And one of them was, a company that built antibodies for use in diagnostics, and tremendously talented, deep technical team of scientists and clinicians. And they had gone to work for that business to solve the kinds of problems that we were setting out to solve, but their value proposition sort of went only so far, and correctly so. It was up to us to try and work out what we could do with that. But when we were speaking to their business people or their business development people, they could also only take it so far. And it was at my suggestion that we get around a virtual whiteboard. They were in the US and we were in Australia. And we started to have this conversation about what we were thinking. And yes, it was under an NDA, so we could talk reasonably freely about what was going on. But what really caught me off guard was how little companies often want to engage with essentially the R&D coalface of another business. And the R&D interface is often there guessing about what it is they're trying to create. And we built a bridge between this pretty quickly and the trust that we created there was such that the business development people, who were often quite quite strong on protecting the channels of communication, they wanted to know what everything was going on. Not long after we started this exchange, we were able, with their permission, quite comfortably to have a whole range of exchanges via email and via other conversations, which yielded a vastly different outcome for the partnership. The partnership in the first place was one around supply chain. And it was about, you know, on our side, so we could say to investors and our customers, we have agreements in place to make sure that this supply chain is solid. And it was during COVID, so everything was flying in every direction in terms of supply chain. But what we discovered was that we actually had access to a remarkable R&D partner that could do a lot of the heavy lifting and thinking that we'd only started to do. They had 30 and 40 years of experience doing this work. We did not. We had, 10, but we didn't have that sort of really strong coalface experience. And once we created that kind of relationship with them, it went from strength to strength, such that we ended up finding ways to make our products more efficient, less costly, more reliable in terms of delivery when we're talking about cold chain storage and transit internationally. Mm-hmm. All of these steps, and it didn't always work, but it worked. I can't imagine what it would have been like had we have not gone down that track to formulate that really solid bond. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of the people involved there are friends and professional colleagues who I think are just quite happy that the risk they took going to work for that business was such that they could do some really interesting scientific work. I feel as though we might have taken that to a new level because mm-hmm. they had a chance to actually engage with people who are trying to really push the envelope. And so my encouragement to everybody is always, yes, if you want to try and distribute your thing through someone else, by all means, think about doing that. But please never forget about the way that you can turn a supplier into a partner and innovate with them on the thing that you thought was pretty good can only be made better through that relationship.
I think that's why we get along so well. I fully agree with you. And I think what, I like that story. And I suspect if I asked you the question, I think sometimes what's really important is to give something away first in a partnership, that it's not always win-win. And I hate the win-win-win-lose.
Yeah.
Thing, right? Sometimes it is actually arguably win-lose in a partnership. But you go, actually, I'm going to give you something that's maybe not as beneficial for me today.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's really good for you, right? But actually, 3 months down the chain, I'm going to look for a bit of quid pro quo, right? Is actually next time, maybe I'm going to get a bit of better for this one, and that's you're it. Going to be a little bit less bitter. But I really encourage people is be the courageous one, right? Be the brave one to give something away first in a partnership,
mm-hmm.
because it's amazing how much comes back. And how much people acknowledge when you do that, right? It really puts wind in the sail.
Huge amount. And, it's funny when people talk about revenue sharing or however you construct the financial model around a yep. relationship, always be the one that offers the generous part, particularly if you're the larger organization going to a smaller organization. That yep. small tweak
yep.
in terms of what they get in the first year, and make it time bound, you know, put the right protections around it, but it will literally change the game. And what they will do to return that favor will be nothing short of extraordinary.
I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, this is it's super exciting. Now, David, I have a couple of other questions for you. What is a partnership that you keep in your mind as an exemplar mm. of everything somehow magically going well?
Oh, look, again, I'll probably go back to my earlier point. I think of one particular partnership that was set up. It was kind of out of the blue, to be honest. Someone, you know, got a phone call, somebody interested in talking a little bit more. And, you know, I think in terms of, and I think about this often, I think partnerships, the worst thing you can ever do is the first meeting, in my mind, virtually. I actually say, again, go there in person. Be the person that actually gets on the plane, gets in the car, and drives and shows commitment to, I'm not only coming to stay with you, but I'm willing to commit the time to come and visit you, right? It's symbolic. And it's not, you know, it doesn't need to be overt. It's just a gesture. And I think that's important. It sets the right tone. And then I think, you know, if I think of this particular example, so, you know, I drove a while to get to this place. You know, I sit down with this individual. And in fact, we spent most of our first meeting talking about all things but the partnership, actually. It was just getting to know another person, understanding our individual and personal values.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was an influential individual, and often his values reflected that of the organization he was representing. My values recognized the organization that I'm representing, and that created the kind of the initial bond, right? And, mm-hmm. and we knew there was something magic. And then, you know, we started talking about almost the art of the possible. You know, this is when I talked about the ambition. What would we like to create together? And, you know, one of the things I'm, as a strategy guy, what I think a lot about is the importance of vision. And vision isn't only about a corporate vision. It actually is about a partnership vision as well, right? What is the vision for this partnership? What are we going to do together? And can we be as explicit as possible about that, right? And I think once you can start describing that future state of the partnership, it becomes much more easy to build towards, right?
Mm. Yep.
And, you know, I think, you know, over the course of probably 3 or 6 months, and this is to your point, keeping momentum in partnership discussions is important. We can all get waylaid. But if it's important enough to actually keep going, commit the time. And I kind of look back at that a couple years on. And, you know, we've all followed through with what we originally thought of on the back of the napkin of what we're going to do. We've all been true to our words. How we've actually got to that endpoint is different than we originally thought. But the endpoint has stayed the same. And we've taken those turns and ducks and dives together, you know, shoulder to shoulder. And, you know, to me, that was just a beginning of something that was a very small idea, well and truly back of a napkin. And it's actually transpired into something that's really quite special, and will continue to grow and do things, you know, quite differently and quite innovatively.
No, I love that. I love that. And let's flip the coin. So what is your cautionary tale to people about partnerships? Is there one or an example where you can see a train wreck coming a mile away and it's, listen, we're not going to go down this track? What is your advice to people around being cautious beyond receiving at the first instance, I'd like to partner with you?
My first cautionary tale is, if it starts with money, run the other way.
Mm.
I particularly think in healthcare, I think if people are motivated by money, it's a very short run partnership. I think if people are aligned by ambition, vision, values, that is something that is enduring. It creates an almost immediate tension if finance is the first conversation, is just a recipe for disaster in my experience.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. And, you know, when you think about the leaders in the world right now, the world is a pretty tricky place at the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different factors and forces causing very continuous decision-making around how to position and posture and reach out and engage. Mm. And I fear that many organizations are wanting to do more reaching out than they can, but are feeling quite conservative. Mm. So what do you think senior leaders are missing at the moment in terms of partnerships?
Look, I think it's, you know, when times are tough and, you know, you read it in the media, the easiest thing to do is hunker down and focus on the core, strengthen the core, batten down the hatches, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's all important to do. But I actually think, you know, when there's dark clouds on the horizon, that is actually the best time to think about how you do that differently. And I've always had this sort of, you know, saying is, you know, those organizations who partner the best in healthcare, well, those will be the organizations who win the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I look at, for example, it was funny, I was in Dubai a couple of years, no, it was probably 18 months ago on the way back from an overseas holiday. And we're walking through the Dubai Mall, and there was a super cool pair of shoes. And it was a collaboration between Adidas and Lego. So it's an Adidas sneaker, but actually all the detailing is Lego blocks. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how cool is that shoe? I love Adidas. I love Lego. And my oldest daughter said, Dad, you got to buy those shoes. And, you know, I've never worn those shoes, Phil. I should go and get them. I've never worn it. But I thought it was the greatest symbol, right, of how businesses who were both kind of struggling a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, over recent years to really be leader against Nike and against sort of, you know, Lego was struggling against online gaming and whatever else. But here's two companies who actually come together to create something quite different that here's me going, I got to buy that shoe because that is really cool. They've started to challenge their own category. They've blended the categories. And actually now you've sold another pair of shoes to David Simpson. And I go, I've got the coolest pair of shoes that I've never worn, but it's a great symbol, right, of how two businesses to come together. And I think that is the massive opportunity for healthcare to move away from their very historic, traditional swim lanes, you know, a monoline business, start to think a little bit differently, start to look for those synergies between each other and how can they capitalize on them. You know, most of all, for the actual patients in which we serve, they deserve better. They do deserve better and we can do better. But you actually need to work with others to do better. You will have your boundaries as a single organization. Find the best people who do what you need to do. And win together.
I love that very much. And I do hope in the next 24 hours those shoes do see the light of day. I hope someone in your family just goes, actually, you know what? Get those shoes. Let's get those out.
That's right. That's right.
Fantastic.
I'll send you a picture of the shoes, Phil.
Oh, please send me a pair of those shoes. I feel now that I want a pair of those shoes.
They don't even have a scuff on them, right? They're pristine.
Look, if they're a size 13, I'm happy to take them off your hands.
You're a taller man than I am, Phil.
Now, we have a five-question rapid fire. Can I send them your way?
Go for it.
All right, here we go. Question one. Complete this sentence. Partnership is?
The way to win in business.
What content are you loving at the moment?
Making New Zealand healthcare better.
What's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
Can I come back to that one? That's a good one.
You
I love
can,
it.
No problems.
It's not Appreciate often you. I'm short of words, Phil, so you're touche. Well done.
When you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
Go and have dinner.
It's funny. Mark Wales, who was on the show just recently, said exactly the same thing. His first instinct is to socialize.
Socialize, spend time, be present, get to know the other person. You'll walk away from the meeting and the dinner knowing if there's another conversation in it.
Love it. Final question before we do come back. I'm not going to let you off the hook off that that previous question. What's one thing you're deeply grateful for right now?
My family.
Let's go back to that other question. What's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
Probably to walk away from an opportunity too soon before you really tested it. And why was it a bad idea? I think you have to go with your gut on partnerships. My gut didn't tell me the conversation was done, and I wish I would have taken it a bit further.
Very, very important thing to listen to. David Simpson, it has been a real pleasure. I hope people who are seeing this and have listened to this have taken a lot away. I've learned even more, as I do whenever we catch up. So thank you for making the time. If people wanted to learn more about you and your organization and the work that you're into, where can we send them?
Well, look, just look me up on LinkedIn, Phil. Pretty easy to find. We'd also encourage people to go to Southern Cross, our website, both group and Southern Cross Healthcare, which is part of the broader group. I also put people towards our community impact report. I think that's something that's really special, shows the impact that we make through the fabric of New Zealand and some of our initiatives that are underway at the moment. So thank you for the opportunity. Always a blast, always fun. You certainly made me think, and I enjoy our friendship.
Thanks for listening to the end of this episode of Partnership Plus. If you like what you heard, you can share this episode via text message. And if you'd like to build your business partnership muscle, my free weekly newsletter called Wednesday Partnership will help you do just that. You'll find a link in the show notes. Finally, I'm big on encouragement and love to see people be in motion towards their ambitions. So if you know someone who might be struggling, reach out to them with a quick message of encouragement. It could change their life. Thanks again, and I'll see you in the next episode.